Welcome to World Cafe Words and Music from WXPN. I'm David Dye.
Nils Lofgren joins us in the World Cafe studio today with a live audience for a fascinating interview, throwing light on not only his lengthy solo career and his latest album, Old School, but also the multi-instrumentalist's longstanding work as a sideman, lately as part of Bruce Springsteen's legendary E Street Band, but also with Ringo Starr and early on with Neil Young. It all started with the Washington, D.C.-based trio Grin in the 1970s. I asked Nils to detail the timing of his early work with Neil and his work with Grin.
I was in, you know, local bands, pickup bands, and then I was in a band called The Waste where we actually started doing original material. But it wasn't until I was 17 that I put Grin together and we became a big local band doing all originals. And long story short, we did some auditions in New York, struck out, so we were going to L.A. And I used to sneak backstage and ask for advice from my musical heroes. And again, long story short, until you want to open it up, at the cellar door, I snuck back on Neil Young and Crazy Horse. And he was very cool and handed me his Martin guitar because I kind of gave him my little spiel. And I sang a song. He said, sing another. And I wound up singing about five or six songs from the first Grin record that was 2 years away from being made. And he knew we were going to L.A. And he... I was underage, drinking age was 18, so he got me a cheeseburger and a Coke and a table, and I spent two nights watching four shows with Neil and Crazy Horse, his first tour, and he had me out to the hotel in the afternoon. He was very friendly and supportive, and he said, look me up when you get to L.A. He actually called me from the road, and he was great. He was like a mentor at an early age, and I was very blessed and lucky. So Grin went out to L.A. David Briggs, Neil's producer, took us under his wing, and as we were going through the rocky ups and downs of our early career, leading to eventually recording with David Briggs producing, Neil would come and play with my band Grin at the Corral. We became the house band in Topanga Canyon. But it was a year after I met him, really, at 18 years of age, that he said, look, I'm doing this after the Gold Rush project. I want you to play guitar, sing, and a little piano. And, you know, I said, well, I'm honored, but I'm not a professional piano player. And I felt like that disqualified me from the gig. But fortunately, David Briggs and Neil both said, well, you know, you've been playing classical accordion since you were five or six, right? And I said, well, right. And he said, you've won contests and entered contests, right? And I said, yeah. I said, well, we just need some simple parts. You'll figure it out. And fortunately, you know, once again, there I am trying to disqualify myself, being honest, from an enormous opportunity that fortunately they, you know, edited me and insisted I give it a shot, and it worked out.
And you ended up writing some songs on the first Crazy Horse album, too.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because as soon as I met Neil, I met Crazy Horse simultaneously, and I got to be friends with them. And, of course, Danny Whitten was this brilliant talent, writer, singer. In fact, Danny, of course, this is not just Danny Whitten, but Danny was one of the guys, if you listen to Neil's first record, which is fabulous, you know, The Loner and that stuff. And then you listen to the Crazy Horse record. Danny was the guy that I kind of inspired all of us with that early Bee Gees thing, you know. He'd do the, I can tell by your eyes that you probably been crying forever. That shaky vibrato. But it was more of like a country and western soulful rockabilly thing. And, you know, we all got influenced by that, even Neil. And all along, the game plan was, as I met Neil and Crazy Horse, that of course, Crazy Horse would make an album featuring Danny Whitten of Danny Whitten's songs. So, After the Gold Rush, that project came up. And Jack Nitzsche, the famous producer, joined the band as a keyboard player producer. I joined the band as a guitarist singer. And Danny asked me to write a couple songs. I wrote a song called Nobody and Beggar's Day, which became fairly well known. And Danny and I sang a duet. And the I Don't Want to Talk About It thing, it was sad because at the time, Danny was still singing and playing well. But he was getting kind of caught under the alcohol and drugs. Danny, you know, I'd tune his guitars. I mean, I was just a kid, and I was happy to be a part of it. And he was still singing great, but I Don't Want to Talk About It was this incredible ballad, and we had to record it. But it was only one verse, and Danny kept saying, no, we can't record it. It's not finished. He said, well, then finish it. So for months, no problem, finish it. Well, now we're in the studio. Now the record's recorded. Now there's nothing left. And we're like, we can't leave that song off the record, Danny. He said, yeah, well, there's no verse. So, well, then write it now. Write it. Just write it now. We'll sit here and wait. Said, and finally, he was just so, you know, kind of bummed out. He said, nah, you write it. You write it. So I ran out in the room, and I go, if I stand all alone, will the shadow hide the color of my heart? Blue for the tears, black for the nights we're apart. And then right back to Danny's line, and the stars in the sky don't mean nothing to you, they're a mirror. Danny went, great. So that's the second verse. So we recorded it, and it was me and him sitting across from each other, singing live, and then Ralphie and I overdubbed. But when we tracked it live, Ry Cooter came in and sat right next to me and played this incredible live bottleneck. So I was out of my mind happy, and, you know, we talked about giving me writer's credit, and I said, no, don't do that. That song's been there for years, and that's not fair, because really the soul of the song was Danny's, and I don't feel like I deserve writer's credit, but I was honored that I was... that two lines was turned over to me to get Danny to go out and sing the damn thing.
What is it about how you came up that makes it so easy for you to become a bandmate, to be able to kind of subsume yourself into band culture?
I don't know, David. I think it's just a natural, evolution of growing up loving music. We were talking about earlier, I love to play basketball. You know, I was a gymnast in junior high. That's where my backflip off the tramp came with my guitar. But I, in growing up, I played a lot of football and basketball in sports. I got pretty good at football, but I was a little guy, and you know, I was never that good at basketball, but I loved it, and I played all the time, and I loved being on a team. Of course, I'm the point guard. I'm a good passer. I'm not the heavy that has to score. And without putting much thought into it, you know, Grin was a two-singer band. I wrote the songs, but we were also a Democracy, except I was a songwriter, and they'd help me with stuff, and we had two lead singers, the drummer Bob Berbrick. And when I got into the After the Gold Rush band, I was only 18 years old, and even then I realized, man, if you love the people and the music, it's fun not to be the boss. You know, it's fun letting Neil Young steer the ship, but helping him create something cool. So I learned at a very early age. I agree. Most solo artists have no interest in learning your songs. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, we're doing my stuff, and that's all right. But I've been blessed with not even the ability, just it's like a calling. Like, yeah, I'm happy to lead the band. I've jammed in thousands of bars where, like, okay, I'll lead. Just follow me. And I'm comfortable. But I also love being on a team of musicians presenting something, especially live. And I got to say... I love just being the rhythm guitar player. If it's a great band with great songs, I don't care. I'll play tambourine. I'm just glad to be on the team.
Nils Lofgren is our guest. And my assumption has always been that you got to know Bruce through those early bands when he was touring. It's kind of in that Virginia area when Grin was out touring.
Yeah, what happened was I discovered Bruce through the Northeast grapevine, followed his career. I was a fan of his early on. And I think it was, we were talking the other day, I think it was 1970. We were both at Bill Graham's Fillmore West. He had this audition night where, you know, the locals paid $2 and, you know, beer's a dollar. And you watch 20 bands play 20 minutes each for hours to try to get an opening act job from Bill Graham. And my band Grin was there, and Steel Mill was there with Bruce. And we both kind of remember each other, but of course we were so worried about getting... passing the audition, so to speak. But that was really when we first crossed paths, like in the same room. And I always followed his career. I was going to see him at the Bottom Line in 74 or 5. I used to buy tickets to go see the E Street Band at the Sports Arena because I moved out to L.A., you know, the Neil thing in 68 to Topanga Canyon. And, you know, he was always friendly. He's very focused before his show. But I'd always go back, shake his hand, give him a hug, tell him I was thrilled to hear him play, and I'd go listen to him play and be inspired. So we were kind of friends, and I was a fan and followed his career. And since I lived in L.A., he was out there a lot recording, and I'd see him. And sometimes we'd take a drive up the coast and just talk music. And it just kind of laid the groundwork. And in 84, and Steve made the painful decision that he had to do his solo work, I don't know if I got the first call, but... You know, I'd been visiting Bruce months earlier up at his house for the weekend. I was kind of down in the dumps. It was like 83, and I couldn't get a record deal. I mean, this is 1983, and the guys were, you know, executives saying, Nils, you know, you're really talented, but you're kind of a dinosaur. Been around since 68, never had a hit record. You know, we wish you well, but there's no work for you here. And I was freaking out. And so Bruce gave me a pep talk, and he understood. Because, you know, I'm a singer-songwriter. And we went and jammed in some Jersey bands, and the whole weekend we listened to Born in USA. He just finished mixing it, probably late 83. And I was like, oh my God, what a great record. So anyway, he was very helpful as a friend. I went back to Maryland and started figuring out what the hell I'm going to do. And a few months later, he called and said, you know, why don't you come back up, May? We'll do some more jamming. Maybe we'll get the band together and, you know, play a little bit. He's very low-key. And I was like, did he say get the band together to play a little bit? That's different than bar hopping. And I knew without asking that he was sadly looking for, Steve was going his own way. So I got a local collector friend, Tom Beach. There was a good buddy there that, you know, one of these honorable collectors that just really is a aficionado of many artists, including Bruce. And he was kind enough to come over, and I listened to some bootleg live tapes and wrote chord charts to songs that are E Street Band staples, like Promised Land, Badlands, Thunder Road, songs you know that they're going to play, so that when I did go up to jam with the band for a couple days, I wouldn't have to ask Gary to shout chords in my ear. You know, they could just play. And at least I'd have some titles say, well, Bruce, I kind of know this one if you want. And so we played for 2 days. And, you know, Bruce picked me up at the airport. And we were both very, you know, at this point we had a friendship. So I said, look, man, I'm getting ready to start an album called Flip. I was going to record a record in Philly with a small company. And no disrespect, but if I'm the right guy, you know, the sooner you can let me know, the better, because I got to cancel a lot of plans and let some people down, and no pressure, but that would be useful. I mean, if it's 4 a.m. a week from now, please call me. And he was the same way. He said, I get it, and you know, I might need a week or so to talk to the guys and feel it out, maybe play with some other people, whatever. I said, I get it, no problem. So we jammed for 2 days, and I was out front getting ready to head back to Maryland and get on with my solo record, Flip, which came out in the middle of the Born USA tour. And he walked out front and he said, hey man, I talked to everyone. It feels good to us. You want to join the band? And I was like, you mean join the E Street Band like now? I said, yeah, it feels good. You mean like become a member of the E Street Band, cancel all my plans, go home and pack, and come up here and do homework. Do 6 months of homework in 3 weeks. I said, yeah. Said, yeah, I'm in. So that was like another one of those, you know, after the Gold Rush moments. And I ran home, packed up, holed up in his room, and banned all music for 3 months except his.
Nils Lofgren is our World Cafe guest for the entire hour today. He has a new disc called Old School. Nils has worked with Bruce Springsteen since 1984 in the E Street Band, joining after Steve Van Zandt left right before the Born in the USA tour. Van Zandt has since rejoined the band. I commented on the similarity in guitar tone on solos between Nils and Bruce, particularly in their use of harmonics.
Well, I think both of us, including Steve, we all came out of that soup of the 60s and then kind of got our own style as we went. The harmonic thing, Roy Buchanan, who was one of my biggest influences, and I had the honor to know Roy because we both lived in Maryland. I went to see him play at this redneck bar in Bladensburg called The Crossroads. And he used to, because he was a mainstay there, he used to tell all the rednecks, don't hurt him, because I had a little long beetle hair over my ears. And back then, they, you know, it was this weird thing where you had to beat up long hairs if you were a greaser. Silly. But anyway, Roy made harmonics, and he showed me how to do it with a flat pick. And I could never do it. But, I mean, he was very helpful. He knew he was my favorite guitarist, you know, him and Jimmy and Jeff Beck. And so I have a thumb pick, and basically it's just like it's the concept if you play guitar, there's a thing called harmonic. If you split the neck in half, it's like, you know, it's like that middle, it's an octave higher bell. And most guitar players do it with one hand there. And then there's these, two other main ones. Now, Jeff Beck gets them everywhere. But that's magic. He did some deal with the devil at the crossroads. I can't do that. But what I found out, you know, Roy did it with a flat pick, and I can't do it. So what I did was just replace the left hand to do the open string with the finger. So if you pick down, you get the regular note. You just brush over the 12th fret. And I found out if you just follow the dots. In other words, I'm up here on the fifth fret, so I go up to the dots here. And I found if I pick down with the harmonic and lift up without it, you get the real note. And I kind of call it bouncing harmonics. Just got a kind of a nice bell sound like this. And those were the sounds of bells I heard from Roy Buchanan, and I had to figure out how to do it with a thumb pick.
I should tell people, if you're interested, Nils has an online guitar school, right?
Yeah. In fact, there's an intermediate school, and the second lesson is an hour of harmonics. Uh-huh. I would do them, including with a flat pick, if you play with a thumb pick. I'm sorry, a flat pick. I do them with a thumb pick, and I show you how to do it with a flat pick. Basically, you just hold it within the first and third finger, and you use that finger to make that sound. But that's the lesson two of the intermediate school. The beginner's school, after 40 years, people came up and said, I'd love to play guitar for fun. I'm not allowed to because I have no talent. I have no rhythm. And I thought, well, that's a shame. Who told you that? And they never know. But that's a perception that if you don't have some God-given gift, you're not allowed to enjoy the gift of music. And that's wrong. And so my beginner's school, they're hour lessons you can download. You know, I tell you about buying a guitar, tuning it, which, of course, you need a guitar and tune. But they're designed for people, no pressure. You don't need talent. You don't need rhythm. If you love music, I'll show you all the shortcuts. And the theme is everything you do with a guitar is kind of gymnastics for the hand, and it's going to frustrate you. So sometimes I'll have you just do the first low three strings or the high three instead of doing all six at once. And also, every lesson, I show you something to do with one finger that takes no talent and takes no rhythm. And you can do it immediately. And then, you know, I'll have you do the lead that you can do right away with no talent or rhythm, and I'll back you up. And you can feel what it's like to make music. And the theme is, if that's all you do for 6 months and you don't learn a thing, do it and get excited about making music and realize you don't need talent or rhythm. Most people love music, and all you need is a love of music and a desire and a little, you know. Now, if someday you can handle 20 minutes of frustration, well, then you're going to have to do that to learn. But meanwhile, you can play music and make music with me as your teacher because I know the shortcuts. Because I started when I was 5 as a classical accordion player. So I've been studying all my life. And, of course, after a while, you get worn down and you look for the shortcuts. And I've found a lot of them, and I'm trying to share them at my beginner's school.
Nils Lofgren is our guest. And the album he made before this new one, Old School, was an album of Neil Young covers. And I was wondering, do you do any Bruce songs?
I do. You know, people ask, well, since you did the Neil Young song cover called Neil Sings Neil, will you do a Bruce one? And probably not, because I've already done quite a few. There's been some great charity records. I did a version of Wreck on the Highway, a band version that I loved, actually, one of my favorite songs. And then I did an acoustic version of Man at the Top, beautiful song. I've sung Seeds, bottleneck version, blues in my shows. I've done Because the Night in my own shows. It's actually on my Birchmere Live, Acoustic Live DVD. It was my version of Because the Night with my long electric solo. But another song I've sung a lot, in fact, I'll sing it for you now, is his famous If I Should Fall Behind. And it's funny because a few years ago, if you go to nilslofgren.com, there's a free version there that you can listen to. Willie Nelson's manager, Mark Rothbaum, is a good friend. And he was getting married about 5 years ago. He said, hey, could you record your version and I'll play it at my wedding? And I did. So it's a free download at nilslofgren.com. But if you like, I'll sing it for you now.
Great.
We said we'd walk together, baby, come what may. That come the twilight, should lose our way. And if as we're walking and her hand should slip free, darling, I'll wait for you. Should I fall behind, wait for me. We swore we'd travel, darling, side by side. We'd help each other stay in stride. But each lover steps forward so differently. Darling, I'll wait for you. Should I fall behind, wait for me. Now everyone dreams of a love lasting and true, but you and I know what this world can do. So let's make our steps clear so the other may see. Darling, I'll wait for you. Should I fall behind, wait for me. Now there's a beautiful river in the valley ahead. There beneath the oak bough, soon we will wed. Should we lose each other in the shadow of the evening trees? Darling, I'll wait for you. Should I fall behind, wait for me. Darling, I'll wait for you. Should I fall behind, wait for me. Darling, I'll wait for you. Should I fall. Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Yeah, it's interesting. I was a side note to that story or that song. I was living in L.A. and in 91 or 2 when Bruce started doing Lucky Town and Human Touch, I stayed in touch, and one day I went up to visit, and you know, a great rare experience that he offered me as a friend. We jumped in an SUV with, at the time, DAT players, digital audio tapes, and he had like pretty much the whole albums. He was just in the final mixing, and he sat me down in the shotgun seat, drove me around the hills in California or Southern LA, and gave me the whole notebook of lyrics, and I listened to both albums in this beautiful car system with the great scenery, which is where a lot of musicians like to listen and get ideas, just driving. You know, because you can't just focus on the music and get tunnel vision. You're kind of, you get a different perspective. Anyway, that song came on, Fall Behind, and I heard it, and I went to myself, you know, the version Bruce did was very just him singing, no bells and whistles, beautiful song. And right then I said to myself, you know, radio is so screwed up that this is going to be a lost classic, and no one's going to hear it. And no one did until the reunion tour when we started doing it live, and now it's a famous song, and I'm so glad, because to me it's one of his greatest tunes.
This new album, Old School, addresses, you're really direct on a lot of things on this album. And one of them is answering the question as to whether somebody who's 60 years old should still be rocking. And you answer it quite positively. Tell me about writing this and about staying in the moment and staying personal.
Well, what happened was after those two great years with E Street on the road, Magic and Working on a Dream, and this is a great gift in my life. I come back to my own music a little bit excited and refreshed because I haven't done it in a while. I wanted to express the yin and yang and the good and bad of my authentic experience as someone who's been around for a while. And fortunately, I got two new hips. It was horrible burying a couple of dear friends in the E Street Band. But you know what? I, like most of you, I've been burying people that just as close to me as Danny Federici and Clarence Clemons for decades, and it's getting worse. And I tried to temper that with, geez, this is part of life now. It's not an aberration. And try to find the gratitude and express that also for the hopes and dreams that I'm excited to have at 60, but not ignore the fears and worries that come with being around for a while either.
And you dedicated it to Clarence.
I had to. You know, yeah. Clarence was a dear friend on and off stage. We spoke every week off the road. It's hilarious because when I was in the hospital for special surgery, just 3 or 4 days in after my double hip replacement, my wife moved into the hospital with me, Amy. And my therapist said, okay, today's going to be your first 3-block walk. Where do you want to go? And of course, he was there spotting me, and I had the walker, and I was very fragile. And I said, you know, let's go 3 blocks up the road and see Clarence Clemons, who's in bed with his first knee replacement of two. And that was my friend. Here I am hobbling with a walker, two new hips, feeling like a bus ran me over. And I hobble into Clarence's room. Usually I'm not the hobbler on stage. And we both laughed. He was sitting there in the bed with the automatic machine moving his knee, you know, 24/7. And he did another one. And God willing and God bless, thank you. We were both out on the road months later doing the Working on a Dream tour, laughing about it on stage.
And you have a song here that someone else who passed away. It was Ray Charles. You have a song for Ray.
Yeah, I was going to. Let me jump to this song, I Miss You, Ray, from the new album. Before Clarence passed away, my dad was my hero. You know, I was lucky to have a fabulous father, and we lost him 13 years ago to Alzheimer's, which was awful. And I just realized, you know, man, we're losing a lot of people. And Ray Charles, who was one of my musical heroes, was a big loss to me. So it was kind of metaphorical, kind of giving myself a pep talk to say, look, you know, you're saying goodbye a lot and it's rough, but life's still grand. There's some family around. There's friends around. Don't just feel the loss. Try to hook into what's left. Otherwise, you're going to blow it, you know. And I was kind of talking to myself as much as everyone else. But that's what that song's about. I've been on the road singing. And, of course, after Clarence died, I wound up on my 60th birthday on June 21st burying Clarence. Ever since that, I've been singing I Miss You C instead of Miss You Ray. And I'll do that for you now. The morning sun, it don't shine as bright the evening stars are dim tonight. Your ancient voice stills my fearful soul. I miss you, see, I miss you, see. I pound my nails, love my wife and kids. My gifts are not as grand as yours. Still this and every note you play heals our troubled hearts. We miss you, see, we miss you, see. We miss you, Terry, Danny, John, Lenny, Ray. I miss you, Dad, your gentle spirit way. Still life is grand
I owe so much to you. We miss you all. We miss you, C. God bless you, Clarence. We love you, C.
Thank you. Thanks.
Nils Lofgren is our guest today on the World Cafe, and that is one from the new album called Old School. Nils, you told how you got kind of matter-of-factly got the news you were in the E Street Band. How does the news of a new tour come to you?
It was a bit of a beautiful shock. I've been so busy touring and making a record. And, you know, after Clarence's funeral, I just, because I really, truly embrace being in these great bands I've been in, and one of the advantages of not being the band leader is I avoided even, I kind of allowed myself to treat the idea of what to do about Clarence's passing as a impossible, inappropriate subject for me. So when I heard that we were selling tickets in Europe for a show, I freaked out. And I was obviously grateful that Bruce has made the decision, of course, with Patty and his family and all that goes with that decision, to see what kind of band we can be. We can't be the band we were. It's going to be kind of a ominous, what are we going to do about that thing? And you know, so people ask, we literally just started. We're just scratching the surface, kind of, you know, looking each other in the eye. And we haven't even gone there. We probably won't even go there for weeks. Mm. So I honestly don't know what we're going to do. And I know whatever Bruce comes up with, as always, no one's going to come up with, you know, a better plan. And I'm behind him 100%, whatever it is.
Nils Lofgren is our guest today. He has a new solo album called Old School. Recently in 2008, he released The Loner, Nils Sings Neil. Nils has a longstanding relationship playing with Neil Young, dating back to the album with Crazy Horse after the Gold Rush in 1970, right at the start of his career. I asked him about the decision to make the Neil album.
Yeah, you know, my manager, Anson Smith, years ago said, hey, why don't you do an album of Neil Young songs? And I was like, well, why would I want to do that? And I didn't really like the idea. But out of respect to Neil as a writer, I thought to myself, oh, man, I don't know. But what I did was I put a list of about 30 songs together. And over the last few years, we lost our two cats, Joey and Frank, sadly. But they were around at the time. So I got up every morning. I get up early when I'm off the road. I got my strong coffee. And I sang for about 2 or 3 hours. I didn't record. I didn't arrange. I sang Neil Young songs to my dogs and cats. And this went on for 2 or 3 weeks, very non-committal. And then, you know what, after 2 or 3 weeks, there was like a dozen songs started feeling like not karaoke. You know, it all sounded like karaoke to me. But after a couple weeks, I said, well, some of these... So what happened was I realized that now some of them, because I love these songs, like one song... In fact, Peggy, his wife, Neil's wife, was really meant a lot to me. She was amazed that I was able to sing Don't Be Denied, which is a very autobiographical piece, and make it work. But we did that on the Tonight's the Night tour in 73, and I played it every night, and I fell in love with that song. Because it's kind of like my story, too, you know? You feel like lost and left out, but you know you got to pursue this dream. And... I decided that if every track was recorded live with no production and no overdubbing, just a live snapshot of me and one instrument, piano or guitar, then it would be a worthwhile project, and it turned out to be that. And of course, in the liner notes, I explained that on the After the Gold Rush project, there were a couple songs Neil wanted me to play guitar on, and he said, get your acoustic, and I was like, I don't own an acoustic. This is the early Grin days, I was only 18. And he said, okay, we'll borrow this one. He had this D18 that if you open up After the Gold Rush, he's in the couch at the Troubadour, and this guitar's leaning against the wall. So that's the guitar he lent me. He'd been writing on it. And at the end of the sessions, I used it to play guitar. Tell Me Why was the big one we did, sitting across from each other, and Till the Morning Comes. And at the end of the session, he said, you know what? you keep that guitar as a gift. You did a great job. And I freaked out. And of course, it's probably my most prized possession. And it certainly was the guitar, the only guitar appropriate to do the Neil Sings Neil album. And I used that for all those live tracks.
You probably wouldn't take that guitar on tour.
No way.
Yeah.
No, that's... Instruments like that, you just can't take on tour.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, just the wear and tear and the sentimental value to it, that stays locked behind six deadbolts. But I break it out and show people, and it's still got the old Neil Young stencil and the case in the 60s, and it's beat to hell. And it's just a great, great piece that I'm honored to have. And I've been using it. It's been getting good use.
Well,
want me to sing one of those?
Yeah.
So I'm going to tune and tell you a little story. We way back in the mid-90s, Neil did the beautiful album Harvest Moon. Had nothing to do with it, but I played some of the songs at the Bridge School Benefit with that band. Then months later, his manager called Ashley and said, look, Neil did the MTV Unplugged show in New York, and he didn't like it, and he's refused to let them put it out. We have talked him into doing it again in L.A., and he wants you to be part of the band. And so, of course, I was thrilled. And I got Neil on the phone, sent me a list of songs to learn, and just talked to him about the overview, which was just basically he wanted me to kind of ghost him. You know, I'm good at copping his feel pretty authentically because I love his music. And just the theme was, you know, kind of double what he was doing on guitar. So if he ever wanted to go off and solo or just sing, the part would be there, the groove would be there, and he wanted that freedom to just improv lead and not lose his theme, or stop, not play at all and sing and not lose his theme, and that was my job. And we played the MTV thing, and it got released, which was great. But early on, he was kind of, you know, it was kind of a rough rehearsal thing, which is another story I won't get into, but when we did the show, we got to this fabulous song, Long May You Run, one of my favorites that I sing in my show. I'm going to sing for you now. And we started it, and he stopped it. He didn't like the way it felt. We started it again. He stopped it. Started again. He stopped it the third time in front of an audience, and then he got frustrated and said, skip that, and let's move on. And I was sitting right in front of him. Another great thing about Neil Young, you know, the producers have all these ideas where you're going to be, and I was like, I don't know, man. But you want to be a team player. And then, you know, Neil, who's very intense, and he overheard the conversation. He said, what's going on? He said, well, we're trying to figure out where I should sit. And he said, well, where do you want to sit? I said, well, I'd like to sit right in front of you, so I'm staring at you singing and playing. He said, well, then that's where you're going to sit. And so all of a sudden, this big debate was ended. And I got to sit exactly where I wanted to sit. That's the beauty of working for people like Neil or Bruce or when I was in Ringo's bands. If it's musical and it's useful to do your job, the answer will always be yes. Doesn't matter what else has to change. The musical answer will be there for you, the solution, and I love that. Anyway, I interrupted Neil and said, well, why are we skipping this? This is like a great song, Long May You Run. He said, well, it doesn't feel good. I said, yeah, but that's not the song's fault. And he looked at me like, well, then you count it off. And so I counted it off. Sounded great, and it's on the MTV Unplugged. So anyway, I'll sing it for you now.
We've been through some things together, trunks of memories still to come. We found things to do in stormy weather. Long may you run. Long may you run. Long may you run. Although these changes have come. In the sun, long may you run. It was back in Blind River in 1962 when I last saw you alive. But we missed that shift on the long decline. Long may you run. Long may you run. Long may you run. Although these changes have come, with your chrome heart shining in the sun, long may you run. Maybe the Beach Boys have got you now, with those waves singing Caroline. The ocean road, get into the surf on time. Long may you run, long may you run. Although these changes have come, with your chrome heart shining in the sun, long may.
Thank you.
Nils Lofgren, our guest on the cafe today. And Nils, some days this isn't a job. I guess I get to say, I love hearing these stories. And there's a Keith question I've always wanted to ask you. You did that great song, Keith Don't Go, early on. There's a story that you were on the short list to replace Mick Taylor in the band.
Yeah, that's a great story that they never got right. I'm a giant Stones fan, you know, huge Stones and Beatles and that whole, you know, the Yardbirds, the Kinks, the Who, but the Stones and Beatles in particular, and a massive fan of Keith Richards. And when I heard the announcement, I was in Kensington, Maryland. I was living in Garrett Park, driving on the radio, and I heard that Mick Taylor quit the Stones, and I literally drove over the median to rush home to call. I didn't know anyone in the Stones. And halfway home, I turned back around and ran my errands because I remembered Ronnie Wood. I knew Ronnie Wood, Grin opened for the Faces. I was like a groupie for the Jeff Beck group, following Ronnie around when he was playing bass and Rod Stewart was singing. So I thought, of course, Ronnie Wood will do the job. Well, a few weeks went by and there was no announcement, and I thought, what's going on? I started trying to call people, and after about 50 calls to try to get anywhere near the Rolling Stones, completely struck out. You know, agents just laugh at you and hang up, and they lie. Yeah, sure, I'll pass that on. And then I got frustrated, so I took a chance, and I called Ronnie Wood. And I got to tell you, man, I was so taken. First of all, he knew me, because I used to be a little guitar groupie with my Telecaster on the Truth album tour with Jeff Beck, and then I was opening shows for him in the Faces with him and Rod, and they were always very friendly and kind and supportive. And Ronnie was so nice. He was like, yeah, you know, they offered me the job, and I said no. And I was like, what? You turned down the job with the Rolling Stones? I said, yeah, I'm going to stay in the Faces with Rod. And I was like, wow, okay. And I'm like, well, I mean, and before I even had a chance to ask, he said, you know what? Keith Richards is at my cottage. He's playing with guitar players. He's frustrated. He can't really, you know, I'm not sure what's going on, but why don't you give him a call? And he gave me a phone number. I hung up, and after months of talking to these idiot agents, I call this number. Keith Richards answers the phone. Yeah, hello. I'm like, is this Keith? Yeah, it's Nils Lofgren. Oh, hi, Nils. He didn't know me, but Ronnie had told him about me. Yeah. And I guess, you know, I said, look, Keith, Ronnie said he said, yeah, we wanted Ronnie. He's not doing it. And I said, well, look, I'm a number one fan. I'm a professional guitarist. I just had to go on record as telling you I want the job. I want an audition. And I couldn't believe another just, he didn't even know me. First time he ever spoke with me. And he was so sweet and open. He said, yeah, I'm playing with these guys and I'm frustrated. And Ronnie, we really want Ronnie, but he said no. So the Stones as a band are going to hold open auditions like in Geneva or somewhere in a month's time. And we're going to have a whole bunch of guitar players come through, sit in with the whole band, and we're going to find somebody. Said, you're welcome to come be one of the mass, you know. And I said, oh, thank you. And, you know, and we hung up. And I was just blown away at the how forward Ronnie and honest Ronnie was about it and how open Keith was to be like, yeah, sure, come on down, audition, what the hell. And, of course, a week later, I think, and I'm just, this is hearsay, but I think Rod Stewart and some of Ronnie's close friends ganged up on him and said, please come to your senses, don't be an idiot. And take the job you were meant to, you're meant to be in that band. And he was, and he is. And those auditions never happened, but that's the story. And to this day, I owe both those guys. And I've met Keith many times. I don't know Keith, but I've met him. He's very friendly. He knows I wrote a song about him.
Nils Lofgren is our guest, and we got time for one more, I think. What do you want to finish up with?
Let me check my tuning. Maybe I'll do a No Mercy. Excellent. One of my semi-rockers here in the acoustic format. Out for the first atmosphere's heavy, world title lays on the line. Strong and proud, he is much older. I'm the faster, I'm in my prime. Third round lady starts to tire. Open cut over his left eye. Spending blood, attack is relentless. In the box seats I see his girl cry. No quarter, no place to hide from me or the man. Left and right never came in order. No mercy, take it while you can. No mercy, take it while you can. Back in my corner they scream no mercy. Put him away, don't let him recover. Someone's eyes drill holes in my head. It is his proud, determined mother. And mama's crying. Wish another could do this thing for me. His eyes are flooded, God, he can't even see. Wanted this title, now it don't feel right. A fight back tears, wanna destroy his life. Now watch me destroy. No place to hide from me, oh man. Right or wrong, Thank you. Thank you.
I'm David Dye. World Cafe Words and Music from WXPN is produced at WXPN in Philadelphia. If you'd like to hear more of our World Cafe sessions and get daily cafe alerts, you can sign up at our website at worldcafe.npr.org. As always, thanks for spending your time with the World Cafe.